Just to review where we were yesterday. So yesterday what we started to do was reorganize the karbanot based on how they provide kapara. And we said the most obvious karban when it comes to kapara and the way it contributes to kapara is chatat, which directly atones for a particular action that you perform. The asham, we noted, on the one hand, is brought for a sin. On the other hand, there are two types of asham. There's asham talui, which is brought when you're not sure if you did a sin, and therefore it's hard to say that it's for a specific action because I don't know if I sinned. There is asham badai, which is closer to chatat in that sense because you bring it for a specific one of five sins. We note that already in the first Mishnah, there's a machloket whether chatat is treated like an asham. And we noted that according to the Ramban, at least, and the Ritvav, the reason might be that there's a second type of way of getting atonement, which is not for the action, but for the person, right? Because, and that would make it more generic. We noted a few implications of that, the possibility, according to Eliezer, of bringing an asham every day, even when you have no reason to believe in particular that you did a sin, right? Because it's kapara, but it's less, right? It's not a particular debt, right? The mashal we gave there, actually, right, was like the difference between taking medicine, taking or cutting off a wart, which is a very specific action, and then, you know, taking medicine that heals the whole body, where you can imagine certain things that, like, yeah, you have a vitamin D deficiency, so you can take it when you're, you know, a vitamin D supplement when you're sick, but you could also take it in general to enhance health, because once you're talking about the person, those can blur. Then we move to the Ola. The Ola is not brought for kapara. It's brought as a gift. It's described in the Gemara as a daron, as a gift to God. And nevertheless, the Gemara says that it atones for mitzvah for which you're not chayav to bring the karban, right? Namely, failing to perform a mitzvah aseh, violating a lot aseh that does not have karet. And in the Agadic literature, it says that it brings kapara for improper thoughts. So how could it be that the Gemara says it's a gift and nevertheless says it has kapara? Is it a gift or it's not a gift? So the mashal we gave for it is the difference between Israel Isaac actually being in a fight with his wife and bringing chocolate and flowers to make up for it, or deciding to bring chocolate and flowers on a regular day, which will, it is just a gift, but still it will make his wife overlook the small things, because when everyone's happy, the small things just sort of disappear. So it is a gift, right? And its goal is not kapara. That doesn't mean that it won't have implications on kapara the same way gifts. Look, you're learning all these wonderful life lessons, right? That bringing presents for your wife will just make life better sometimes. You know, this is a lesson, right? Okay, good. And then we said there are certain things like the tamid, which are really not about kapara, right? It's about, they're part of the structure of the Mishkan, the functioning of the Mikdash. You bring a tamid every day. And nevertheless, you have sources that at some level they have kapara. And we say, well, that's sort of true also, right? Meaning, even if your house is running normally, right, you have the lights on and things like that. So you're right. You don't turn on the lights so that there'll be peace in the house. But it still contributes, right? If you don't pay your bills and the electricity is turned off, you're more likely to have fights in the house. People are not as going to be as happy. So the reason you turn on lights in the house is nothing to do, at least consciously, with, you know, rectifying fights. But it does. It is hard to deny that in the background, it does not create a certain amount of kapara. So we noted that it is, on the one hand, legitimate to talk about almost all karbanot as having some connection to kapara, but we've outlined four conceptual ways to do that for a particular action, for a particular person, right? To create goodwill such that you can paper over the small things, right? Or even less, that you can just have a normal functioning life in the Mikdash, right? Which, just like in life, when things are running well, so, you know, people are less tense, right? And therefore things are better off. The same thing could be said at some level in the Mikdash, right? So that is the four levels that we talked about yesterday. We have a few more karbanot to talk about before we move on to starting Zvachim itself, okay? So these are, so far, the four levels of kapara. Now, there are some things that are, let's say, close to the tamid, right? In the sense that they are really brought for something completely different, right? But, right, so these are going to be things that, right, are not for kapara at all, right? But may have
secondary implications. This is similar to the case of the Tumid, but the Gemara's classic example for this is Bigdei Kihuna.
Okay, the wearing of the Bigadim. So the wearing of the Bigadim. Why does the Kohen wear special Bigadim in the Beit HaMikdash? According to the Chumash, according to the Torah. His special clothes. Yeah. Very good. The Kavod of the Teferet. Very good. Someone knows Chumash. Right? For glory. Makes me happy when people know Pesukim. Thank you. Appreciate it. Right? For glory, either for his glory, God's glory. That's why he wears fancy clothes, right? That's why he wears, right? That's why the Kohanim wear special pants and special hats and special, and the Kohen Gadol for sure with the with the special meal with bells and whistles, not whistles but bells and pomegranates, which is not the expression, but sure. L'kavod l'tiferet. Nevertheless, the Gemara says, "Amar Rebin Yana Bar Thathon." We're going to come back to this in Agarata. After Yom Tov, Lama Nishmecha Parshat Karbanot the Parshat Bigdei Kuna. Why are the psukim about the sacrifices juxtaposed to the psukim about the clothes of the Kohen? Lomer lecha to teach you Ma Karbanot Mechaprin Af Bigdei Kuna Mechaprin. Just like the sacrifices atone, the clothes of the Kohenim atone. Ktonet Mechaper al Shvichot Amim. Mashvichodam, right? The ketonet atones for murder. Now, what does that mean? So obviously not in any intense way, because if you find a murderer, does he still get killed, even though the Kohen Gadol is wearing the ketonet? Yeah, obviously, right? Wait, wearing pants, it brings atonement for forbidden sexual unions, because it is worn to cover the sexual parts, the sexual organ. So therefore, it brings kapara. Again, if someone commits adultery and he comes into court and he says, "Why did you commit adultery? Your edim who warned you and said if you commit adultery, you're going to be killed." And he says, but the Kohanim wore pants." It's like, and like, what is your point, right? When we talk about kapara here, we don't mean kapara in any sense. The guy is responsible for his action. The guy is still in trouble. Right, so what do we mean kapara in this sense? We mean like, I don't know exactly, yeah.
I could say like the nation of Israel.
Yeah, exactly. We mean like the Jewish people are responsible for each other, so if there are murderers around, God is going to punish them, and at some level, whatever that means, the fact that there's a functioning Beit HaMikdash provides a certain amount of kapara for the nation. How much? I don't know. Right, clearly not full kapara. How do I know it's not full kapara? How do I know that? What? Yeah, people get punished. Like the Tanakh, right? Tanakh is very clear. The Nevi'im are very clear. Bayit Rishon was destroyed because people worshiped the Avodah Zarah and they murdered and they committed Gilui Arayot. Right? No one ever asked the question, how was the Beit HaMikdash ever destroyed? All sins were forgiven because the Kohen Gadol was where we got them. It's like, oh, come on. Right, everyone understands this means that, like, at some level, there's some sort of secondary function that if there's a Beit HaMikdash, so God provides a little bit of forgiveness for sins that are happening in the nation. We all understand that when it says kapara, it doesn't mean we've erased all sins, even though, yes, some of the mafarshim are not so clear on this. They start asking questions. Maybe it's all, you know, okay, whatever. We're going to leave that. But the simple implication of this is, right, there's a category of things which, look, they're not about kapara, they're about something else. And then, like, secondarily, there's a certain amount of incomplete kapara that is provided, right? So if we're going on our levels of how intensely is a carbon related to kapara, we have chatat, which is the most direct, for a specific action. Asham, a little bit less direct. The person clearly is in a problematic state, but in the case of, let's say, the Asham Tali, we don't know what he did wrong, so he's getting kapara, but it's a little less direct than a chata. The ola, again, it's a gift, but it can paper over small problems. The tamid creates general goodwill. And now we're talking about, like, at some level, even less intense than that. Or to give another example, right? If I asked you, why do you bring a karban yoledet? Right? Why does a woman bring a karban yoledet? Because she does. So the Gemara says, right? Shalu Tamid David Rishon Ben Yochai Mipnei Ma Amrat Torah Yoledet Mevi'a Karbon. Why does a woman who gives birth bring a karban. Amar lan, bishasha karat leled, when she is giving birth. So, if you've ever been there for childbirth or watched movies or TV or whatever, right? I mean, they over-dramatize it and people are screaming, you know, like that sometimes does happen. It doesn't happen to everyone, just know that. It does happen to many people, but not everyone, from experience. Bishash shikarat leleid. Yeah, it's the difference when I go into the hospital. When we go into the hospital, like, Ara is very calm about everything. So, like, you know, there'll be the person next to us screaming, the baby's coming out. And then you'll, like, hear the doctor being like, she's dilated half a centimeter, right? And, like, you know, like me, one of my twins was born without any doctors in the room. Like, Ara didn't even notice. Like, one of the twins literally just came out on the bed. And I was like, I think I'm giving birth. I went to get the doctor. I was like, no, you gave birth. One of the twins is sitting there. There's like, my, you know, there's a range of how much screaming there can be. But, okay. B'shash karat leilet kofetet v'nishbat shalot tizakek l'bala. She swears that moment. She swears off sex. She's like, never again. Right? It's never happening again. The fichach amrat orak tavi karban. Now, at first glance, you'd say, aha, this is a karban which is directly related to kapara. Except, is it? No, obviously not. Because what if you have someone like Ara, who is not screaming her head off, right, while she's giving birth, and is not swearing and whatever, so she shouldn't bring a karban yoledet? No, obviously she brings a karban yoledet. Like, we're saying that, like, you bring a karban yoledet because you bring a karban yoledet to the Torah, says bring a karban yoledet for whatever reason it brings. And then the Gemara adds, like, but, like, if you want to start talking at the level of, like, the rationale behind the mitzvot, so many women who are screaming at that moment, not only do they scream, but they also make a vow that they're never going to be with their husband. So, like, the karban sort of creates a level of kapara for that thing that they did. I mean, like, but it's not that thing, but it's so far removed. It's not like an ashram. An ashram is, I know that I ate this piece of meat, and either it was or it wasn't forbidden, I'm not sure. Why? Right? That's, like, pretty direct. Well, then there's the other, it's like, because what if a woman said, I know that I did not, right? I was under, right? I went in, it was a planned C-section. Right? It was a planned C-section. I had no, right? I had no contractions, no nothing. I went in, it had to be early. I went in 36 weeks, right? They put me under, right? I woke up and there was a healthy baby, you know, yalla, right? She knows 100%. She didn't curse. She didn't swear. She didn't do anything, right? By an asham, you would say, that's not a suffix. This is like, and this is why you're right. There is a certain common denominator between these, and that's why it's important to see it like this. But is there a common denominator between the Asham and these, or for that matter, the Ola? Right. Yes. Right. But are they the same? No, they're not the same. Right. This is clearly, it's like really the Karban Yoledet that is brought because she gave birth, and you're chayav to bring a karban. And then the Gemara gives like, oh, okay, like derech machshava. Right, there's some sort of, right? But again, that's very different from the ashram, where there's a very specific thing that you know you might have done or might have not done, which was egregious, right? Rather than some women are going to do, right? Like, this is a very specific case, right? It's not just, right? It's the woman might be in pain, and at that moment, she specifically swore that she would never, right? She was of right enough mind not just to scream and yell and curse and whatever, but to decide at that moment that as a function of that, she was going to swear to never be with her husband again, right? That's like, I don't know how many women that actually happens to. I'm sure it has happened, I'm sure, right? Especially in a world before birth control, I'm sure there were women who, that was actually what they said. Right, where nowadays the equivalent would be, you know, we're putting in an IUD tomorrow. I mean, okay, right? Like everything, life changes. But yeah. Because you don't know, because how do you know? I know I ate this piece of meat. I know what it was. Right? I'm not a nuffy, right? If someone calls me with a shayla and says, Rabbi, is this food kosher? Then maybe I can answer, maybe I can't. If someone calls me and says, Rabbi, I ate food yesterday. Do you know whether it was kosher or not? don't know. I mean, what do you want? Right, that's what Nosham is, right? He says, I ate a piece of fat. I don't know whether it was a chilev, right, or it was shuman. It was kosher fat or forbidden fat, right? Rabbi, do you know? I don't have any pictures. I'm just asking you what I ate yesterday. What? No. This is Asham. Yeah. No, but that's where I know in advance and I posken incorrectly. And Asham is where I don't know what I ate. Okay. The next circle is Shlomim. Okay? Because so far all of these, maybe they're sort of about Kafara. What about Shlomim? What does the Torah say Shlomim's about?
Shalom.
Yeah, what does it ever say Lechaper?
No.
Not really. It's Vinir Tzav, right? It's what's Vinir Tzav? Yeah, it's want, desire, become ingratiated with. The translation is interesting. My chavrus has a paper on that one. My chavrus did is like one of my longest running chavrus, I think, probably one of, or second, did his PhD on Kachim at Yale. So he has a bunch of articles and his PhD on various things in Kachim, but I'm pretty sure he has a chapter just on the word Risui. I think so. Yes, that would be the article called the Transformation, yes, Acceptable to Will, the Rabbinic Transformation of Ratzon in Sacrifice and Prayer. Right, so okay, the exact translation of Risui we can talk about, but Risui is not Kapara. It's not Kapara. And I gave you as one piece of interesting evidence just how much Shlomim is like outside normal realms of Kapara. Is the fact that Gemara has this very surprising halacha in Menacha, which is...
That it's the same thing, that if one is to take some of the flour for the meal offering and to get...
What does the Gemara say in Menachot? You asked me specifically about this Gemara before.
Yeah, if you take the wheat, lo lishma, it's essentially the same stuff as the first Mishnah.
No.
Ovid Kochavim
yes.
Offers a shlamim.
Yeah.
It's an ola.
Then an Ovid Kochavim can't even bring it. Meaning an Ovid Kochavim says, I want to bring a shlamim, it automatically becomes an ola. Automatically. Why? So the Gemara says, Shalom Tamid Rishon Yochayim, sorry, Shalom Me Ovid Kochavim Olot. Ibeim Ekra, Ibeim Svara. Ibeim Svara, Ovid Kochavim Libo Lo Shamayim. First one he says is, the idolater, his heart is for heaven. Now, what does that mean? The heart is for heaven. Yeah, so the way Rashi says it is, look, it's like counterintuitive. Like, Karbanot in the ancient world, you were giving something to God. That's what you did. You were giving a present to the gods. They were hungry. So an ola makes sense. A shlamim, where most of it is eaten by people, and you give God a token, is completely counterintuitive, because most of it isn't going to God. And therefore, even if he decides, libo l'shamayim is, when he says karban, what he means is, I'm giving something for God. And even if he calls it a shlamim, he doesn't get that. Right? V'ibayim akra, asher yakrivu l'ashem ola, kol d'mekarve ola lahave. Or anything he brings will be an ola. Now, what does that show you? I just gave you one example. But, like, ola, shlamim is just, like, completely different than any other karban. Like, the normal svara of karbanot in the ancient world where sacrifice was people brought was you gave something to God. Shlamim isn't that. It's counterintuitive. It's something else, right? We are eating together with God, whatever that means, right? That isn't kapara. That is completely, right? Like, if we're going from negative to positive, right, to positive, each of these is getting more positive, right? By trying to get the shlomim, this is ritzui. You're adding, right? You're adding goodwill. We're eating together. Well, it's clear that most of them are about kapara. The Torah says it's about kapara.
Only two that it says so about kapara.
Again, how? But remember, like we pointed out, right? Like by ola, we said ola is a gift, but it creates goodwill, right? Which papers over for certain minor sins, right? That is on a continuum, right? I know we're not calling this kapara, but again, the same way that we said with Israel Isaac, if he brings a present, right, on a normal day, it adds goodwill, right. That's why it has the, right, a gift can have multiple things. It can solve problems, right? It can solve, it can make, it can create general peace, or, you know, it's an anniversary present. All it's doing is making everybody happy, right? But that's on a continuum, right? The fact that chocolate and flowers, which is his go-to gift here, can, you know, can be used if he did something wrong or did something small wrong, or to show that he remembered their anniversary, right? There's a reason that those are on a continuum. Now, you're right. Okay? Here. It's not kapara, but it's not related. It's not related, right? If I use, I talk about goodwill, right? Goodwill, you can have good, you know, you might sometimes need to create goodwill because there was ill will, right? Or you can do things to create goodwill because you want to go from neutral to positive or from positive to more positive, right? There is a continuum there. There is a conceptual continuum, even though they are different. But again, you might want to say that there's a break here. Right, it's stronger or fundamentally different, right? Which is what the Gemara is saying. It's completely counterintuitive from the way most people in the ancient world would have understood Karbanot. But on the other hand, right, there is a certain level of, continuum. There are, though, two more types of Karbanot where they do seem to fall off at some level of this. And that is Karbanot that are coming to accomplish some function, which is not kapara related. It's about something else. The two classic examples here are machshirim. What's a machshir? Right, it's a karban that, right, so the machshirim are any karban that they restore your ability to do something. So mechuser kapara. Someone is tamei, right? So certain types of tumah, like zav or zava, in addition to counting the clean days and going to the mikvah, at that point, they're tahor, except for the purpose of re-entering the mikdash, and then they need a karban. If they don't, they're considered mechuserei kapara, right? They're lacking atonement. But that atonement's a little bit different, right? They didn't do anything wrong. It's without that karban, they can't go into the mikdash. It has a very limited focus.
Hey, where do they offer the karban?
What?
Don't you have to go to the mikdash to offer the karban?
So which one of them?
There's, you said that without the korban, they can't go.
Correct.
So how do they offer the korban?
So that's a good question. So there are different ones in this list, right? So Mitzora has one, and he stands at the border, right? You put the blood in his fingers. He doesn't actually come inside, right? You can send korban out. There are different ways that this would happen. What? That's Tumat Meit. That's only Tumat Meit.
Oh, it doesn't mean you.
Paraduma is only to my mate.
It doesn't solve directly to my mate.
No. The other ones have their own processes, yeah.
Oh, it's not like
when
you do it,
you're fully powered. No. Zav have their own rules, yeah. Correct. Right. Correct. Even more
obvious. Now, this still is called, kaparas. You could say, okay, well, there's still something missing. They can't go into the
mikdash. But then you have things that are bachal, not related to that. They're matirim. They create permissions. There's no sin, no nothing. There's no nothing, right? The classic example of that is the omer, right? The carbon omer. What does the carbon omer do?
It allows you to eat.
Yeah, it allows you to eat the new grains. So you didn't do anything wrong. Grain grew, and you can't eat the new grain until you bring the carbon omer. That's all. There's no sin, no nothing. Right? Not necessarily, right? There's different types of karbanot, right? There's a bunch of karbanot where kapara is part of it, and then there are other karbanot, right? I mean, now how do I know that, now a good piece of evidence that the Omer is really totally defined by its ability to be matir is something we'll get back to, so I'll just throw it out now, is the Gemara in Dav Dalet that tells you that despite everything we're going to see in the first mission about Lishma, by Omer, the Gemara says very simply, if you bring it lo lishma, it's invalid. Why? Because the first mission, as we're going to see, says that when you bring most karbanot lo lishma, kasher velo Allah, they are valid, but they don't, right? You don't get atonement. But what about a matir? A matir, something that's coming to permit. So the Gemara says, well, what would that mean? That the Omer is valid, but it doesn't permit. That's meaningless. It's coming to permit. So the Gemara says, Mincha da Omer shekimta shelo lishma psula. Ha'ul uba lahatir velo etira. It came to permit, and it didn't. It's just meaningless, right? Meaning, there are certain karbanot. What is its definition according to the Gemara? To permit. That's what it's doing. If it can't do that, it's not a karban, right? It's not like it is a karban and it permits. It is a karban that permits. If it doesn't permit, it's nothing. Right? So it's very clear that by this point, we're dealing with something that, like, its identity is nothing to do with kapara. It is one goal, one identity, which is make the new grain mutter, right? So it's once we start getting here, it's where we move mostly out of the circle, right? Shlamim, I would say, is sort of there because it's still on the negative deposit. But then you have these that seem to be karbanot about accomplishing functions that have nothing to do with kapara, mati or whatever. And the last example are the ones that are brought to eat. Where we're going to talk about, those are a little bit interesting because they do seem to be about eating, but they're also somewhat like shlamim. So we'll have to talk about that. It's Karban Pesach, Bechor, and Meiser. But we'll get back to this. Right. So that's going to be the last category here of things that are not really part of the Kapara cycle. Right. Shlamim is like on the border, and then there's the things that are brought for completely other purposes. Right. So that's basically, right, the reorganization of Karbanot, but this is going to help us as we move into Lishma. Any questions before we start actually learning Masechet Zvachim? We good? Okay. So let's start Zvachim. So right off the bat, the Mishnah at the beginning of Zvachim introduces the concept of Lishma. So, Zvachim, Bet. Kol HaZvachim Shenizbichu Shelo Lishman Ksherim. All sacrifices that are sacrificed not lishma are, translate kasher for me.
You can offer them, like, continuing the
Gemara. Okay, good. That having continued the Gemara, that's a good read. They are, right? They can be continued, right? That's good. Kosher is the word. Well, how would you translate to English? I will. Okay. Methodological point here for a second. Since for most of us, all of us, our first language is English. Sometimes I will force you to translate something to English because there's a very simple reason. When you say things in Hebrew, often there's this like magic quality to it, which is that you can hide behind it as if it's like this magic word. You don't have to explain it. When I was editor of Beis Yitzchak, which is why I use like Torah Journal, we had a rule, me and the other editors, which was if someone wrote a svara in an article and you didn't understand it unless he was standing in front of you waving his hand at you, right? It was a bad svara, right? If you can't articulate it in words, in your first language, where you have to be held responsible for the words coming out of your mouth, you don't know what you're talking about, okay? So, I know you know Hebrew, and definitely a word like kosher you know, but if I force you to translate into English, right, it will force you to think more clearly, right? So I will often do that, and I really dislike, you will see this will be a division between my share and other share. I really dislike brisker jargon, all jargon. I really dislike jargon because people hide behind jargon. So if you use jargon, I may let you use it, but only if I am sure that you know what you are talking about. Kosher is not really that word, but in this case, I think it is helpful to translate it into English. Fit. But what? Fit. So, but what does fit mean? Fit to continue. Right. So that right the what. Right, but so that is what, right, so sometimes, kosher, sometimes you would think means, like, a pure, or in the context of karban, you might have thought, if you just stopped at the word kosher, you would have thought, yeah, kosher, like, it's good, but it's clearly not, because the next words, Ela shelo olu b'ayilim l'shem chova, but the owners do not fulfill their obligation, which means it can't mean good. Right. Well, not even permissible. Permissible doesn't quite capture the complexity there. What? Right. Meaning, what the Gemara is clearly saying is kosher is it is kosher just means it is a karban, right? It is valid, right? Therefore, it can continue, but you aren't right. You don't fulfill your obligation. But what does it already tell you about karbanot? Now we're going to start reading very carefully. What does that tell you about karbanot? Does
that is not just
wait? Is that okay? I'll take a step back before that. If I asked you a priori, okay? Okay, that was just a blank stare there. Okay, what? Someone want to translate that for me?
A priori means before facts.
Before facts, you knew nothing, okay? And I asked you, as opposed to a posteriori. Right, if I asked you, you don't know the Mishnah, you don't know the Halacha, and I asked you, okay, there is a karban, there is a sacrifice that you have to bring for a reason. If the sacrifice you are in the process of bringing is not going to accomplish that for you, and you're going to have to bring another one, should you continue with the first one? What would your intuition have been? No, I mean, no, like, well, I understand. What? What? Burn it! What do we do with an animal that becomes tummy?
Well, that, but it's not tummy, though.
Okay, but if I tell you that this carbon has now been messed up in such a way that it won't help you, what would your intuition have been?
Well, it can still happen.
Okay, so we have, okay, let's, no, this is good. We have people with different intuitions. Good. Whose intuition would have been, if it's not going to help you, then it clearly isn't a good karban. Okay, we have a few of you, that's your intuition. Eitan says no. Eitan is like, if I didn't have the Mishnah, I would have written the Mishnah. Good. So now I want you to defend your view.
Well, I'm saying, like they said, late, like I'm skipping, but they said you can't do Pesachot and...
I'm asking you a priori. You, saying, if I'd asked you...
I'm saying, I know that this... And like you said here, Ola is a gift. So even if I was meant to bring a different one, I can still always give a gift to God or...
Okay, or so Eitan says, no, intuitively he actually thinks that the Mishnah makes a lot of sense.
I still
right?
have to give my shlomim or whatever.
Right, why? Because he says, listen. Right, good. And this is why this introduction was helpful. Because Eitan says,
there are karbanot which have secondary effects, right, that are brought for one thing and have a secondary effect. What does that tell you?
That
exactly, that a carbon isn't defined entirely by its localized identity, and therefore it's conceivable that something will be.
Yes, but now I understand. But Eitan is saying that this for him is intuitive. There's no right or wrong here. I'm trying to spell things out, right? But Eitan says for him that's intuitive, right? The idea that a carbon could have multiple functions, such that there could be a maximally performing carbon. And then there could be a carbon that, listen, it got messed up, so it's not perfect, but it still does something. I don't know what it does, right? For him, that's intuitive, right? For those of you who did not share that intuition, why don't you share that intuition? Again, it's not about right or wrong. Right, so Evan just has to understand. A carbon's brought for a purpose. The carbon is brought for the purpose, right? If the purpose isn't going to be accomplished, then... The carbon's identity was wrapped up in his purpose, right?
It's like the metaphor of your wife being angry. Maybe the flowers and
chocolate.
You need a bigger present, but at least you'll give the flowers and chocolate. Maybe
you'll okay, some of the right? Stuff. But there's two intuitions here, right? But good. So now what? And what is the good? So who's right? Whose intuition was right? Both of you are right. What are you fighting about? Right? I wanted to highlight the intuition. The Mishnah says, "Call us vachim shenizbechul shalol lishma." So the Gemara tells you, wait a second, an ideal karban must be brought lishma. We haven't defined lishma yet. Right? Just watch how much conceptual work we're going to have to do here. First of all, right? Well, let's just read the words. How many questions do you have? Call us vachim. Right? All karbanot. Well, we don't know all karbanot. All zvachim, which is all animal karbanot. But fine. The beginning of menachot is going to call menachot. Shenizbechu. Now there's another ambiguity, which is, what is nizbechu? No. They were slaughtered. Very good. So the halachot we're about to read, we do not know yet whether they are only about shechita or all the processes in the karbanot. We don't know that yet. How many processes are there in the karbanot? There's four avodot. There are other processes, but there'll be four avodot. But the point is that there's a lot more past shechita. We don't know yet. Shelo lishman, not lishma. Now, we're going to have to figure out, first of all, what does lishma mean? And more importantly, why didn't the Mishnah start, since Shlomo loves being extra medayik, what would have been a more reasonable way to start this Mishnah? Chayav adam lishbach et hazvachim lishma. You have to shach lishma. And if you didn't, but no. The Mishnah starts with the negative, which you need to figure out why.
Why? Because it's obvious. Why
the better carbon? Is it really?
Could be.
I don't know yet, but you at least need to ask the question because guess what? Well, what if you didn't bring it not lishma, but you didn't bring lishma either? Oh, very good. But okay, lo lishma, what can lo lishma mean? Translate the words.
Not worth
me. Or?
For any other
Very good. Lo lishma can either mean I lack the positive quality called lishma, or lo lishma, I proactively brought it for a different reason. Which one is the Mishnah talking about? We don't know yet. We don't know yet. Don't jump to the Gemara. Don't even let the Gemara cheat for you. First read the Mishnah, right? Just like the Gemara would have. First read the Mishnah. I remember once in Relichonsin Shir that Relichonsin used to do this also. He'd start with the Mishnah and be like, okay, what are the conceptual questions you have to ask? And then, right, he did one of these and someone jumped up and who had just transferred into Yeshiva from somewhere else. It was an Israeli. He was Shir Dalid. I know it was, but I won't say his name. Very big Talmud Chacham, who had just transferred in from another yeshiva, and he wasn't used to this, what Ruach HaMetzin did yet. And he said, why is that a suffix? The Gemara on Daf, whatever, answers it. And Ruach HaMetzin did, yes, but the Gemara asked the question, which shows you it wasn't obvious, right? If it was obvious, no one would have to say it, right? But the Gemara is going to ask it, because the Gemara is going to introduce the wonderful category of stama lishma, right? Right? Which is, maybe things are lishma without being lishma, because they are... Right? And their normal status is to be lishma. Well, now you got to, right, to figure out some lishma, you got to define the word lishma. Okay. Then it says, kasher, kshirim, elishlo, olu lubay, l'mashem chovah. But then it immediately says, chutz mena pesach v'achatat. Except for the korban pesach and the chatat, ha pesach bizmano, the pesach on pesach. Well, not on pesach, actually. Well, yes, on pesach, not on pesach. Okay. Let's define our terms here. Biblically, when is Pesach?
Yudalid.
Close. Yudalid from Chatzot and on.
Yeah.
Right? From is the time at which you bring the carbon Pesach. What is the holiday that begins at Tetvav Nisan at night called? No. Biblically.
Chagamatzot.
Very good. Colloquially, by the time you get to Chazal, Pesach refers to?
Both.
Right. Well, almost entirely, well, and biblically it's called Chagamatzot. Right, and Pesach becomes known as Erev Pesach, right? Arve Pesachim. So you have to define your terms, but biblically Pesach refers to the latter half of the 14th day of Nisan, and Chag HaMatzot is the 15th to the 21st, right? Whereas in the Gemara, usually Pesach means the 15th to the 21st, and 14th is Erev Pesach, and then there's a machloket in the Gemara, whether that is only from Chatzot and on or starting from the morning. Nafkamina for karbanot and for Isser Chametz and Isser Matzah and Isser Matzah, actually, not Isser Chametz.
And it's based on the Beis Shammah. And Beis Shammah is the one that's from
Matzah. No, it's not. It's not a Machlok Beis Shammah. Vachatat and the sin offering. Hapesach v'na vachatat b'chol zman. And Rabbi Eliezer omer afa asham. Hapesach v'zmano vachatat v'asham b'chol zman. And we've already seen this line. And why does Rabbi Eliezer include both the Asham and the Chatat? Because Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Achatat Bo Al Chait, V'Asham Bo Al Chait. Because the sin offering and the guilt offering are both bought for sin. Machatat Psul Lo Lishma. Afa Asham Pasul Shelo Lishmo. Just like the sin offering is invalid if it's brought not Lishmo, so the Asham as well. Okay? Now, let's stop here for a minute. So you tell me, right? The Gemara now, the Mishnah now presents two general types of karbanot. What are the two types of karbanot? Don't give me names of karbanot. Two types of karbanot that the Mishnah outlines.
Those that come for sin? And
no, those are examples of it.
Lishma.
Those that, without lishma, are valid but don't count. And those that, because they don't count, they aren't valid. Is that fair? Right, which, as the Gemara will clarify, practically what that looks like is kasher v'lola ola are, as Rabbi said, karbanot, which you will continue offering despite the fact that they won't achieve their goal, but you continue offering them, and karbanot, that once they are invalidated, you stop the process and burn the meat because it is invalid. And those are the two categories. Now, let's go back to our intuitions here. So, yes. Because a Pesach not on the 14th automatically becomes a Shlamim.
So
it
would be different?
Yes.
Why would you be Shlamim?
No, it is a Pesach. Pesach becomes Shlamim. We're going to see this, not today, but in the next Makarot, we're going to see this, that Pesach is interesting. Because Pesach, if I try to bring a Pesach today, it automatically becomes a Shlamim.
If you said, I want to bring a Pesach, they'll just say, oh, it's a Shlamim?
It becomes Shlamim. Right. Correct.
Did you have to
ask? No, it's a Shlamim.
If you right now went up to Harabias with a lamb and shechted it,
well, there's no mizbeach, so it'd be puzzle.
Yeah,
because there's a mizbeach. There's no mizbeach. I don't mean today. I mean not Yud Dalet. I mean we're in the middle of Tishrei, Elul. We're almost at Tishrei, right? We're in Elul. Ah, that's a good question. We're going to see that. It's not a point. You did it. The question is not, should you do that? Obviously, you shouldn't do that. If you want to bring your shlamim, bring your shlamim. But you did. Now what do you do with it? So the Gemara says, it's a shlamim. No, you still have the parts that go on. But yes, that's true. So now let's go back to our intuitions, right? We don't know exactly what the Shema is yet. But we said, okay. Apparently, there is this thing called the Shema that qualifies a carbon, that makes it good, okay? But the Mishnah then outlines two different types of cases. Cases where, even if it doesn't accomplish its goal, it is valid, and therefore is continue to be brought. And those where, if it won't do its goal, it's nothing. So again, we're going to have to deepen our understanding of it, but at first glance, at first intuition, right? So why is that? So here we had Evans and Eitan's intuitions. Eitan said, well, I don't understand. Just because something has a goal, that doesn't mean it doesn't have secondary goals. It doesn't mean it can't accomplish something, even if it isn't maximally successful. So it should be valid. You should keep bringing it. It'll do something. And Evans said, what are you talking about? I brought it for reason X. But if it's not going to do X, then it's zero. And the what? Good. But now what we discover is that the Mishnah says there's two different types of karbanot. There are karbanot where either it accomplishes X or it accomplishes nothing, and then karbanot where even though they're supposed to be for X, they are still valid. You continue bringing it, which tells you, going back to our now reorganization here, right? We said, if you remember, which were the two karbanot we said that were the most wrapped up in the purpose for which they were brought? Because it was the most direct kapara. There's a specific act I need to atone for, and that's why it's brought. And then there was these categories, right? The things that are not about kapara at all, they're brought. No.
You can bring an ola.
Ola is very generic. It's a gift which happens to accomplish. Gifts are very non-specific. Right? Gifts are very non-specific, as we know from Israel Isaac, who can bring chocolate and flowers because he made his wife angry because it's Erev Shabbos or it's his anniversary. Gifts are very versatile. We'll expand your repertoire later in the year. We'll come up with something else. But for right now, it's all chocolate and flour. What?
No, the item is the gift.
Come on.
The purpose is not the gift.
It's a Friday afternoon, and Israelita comes with flowers and chocolate, and he thinks he's bringing it because it's Friday, and then he comes in, and his wife says, oh, honey, you remembered our anniversary. He's like, yes, that's exactly what it was. That's exactly what I was doing, right? Gifts are versatile, right? They can easily slip from one end to the other, right? Gifts are versatile, right? As opposed to, you know,
for messing up.
Right? Chatos. It's very specific. Right? You can't come in and say, I have a fine to pay, but instead of paying the fine, I'm going to bring chocolate. Right? I have a $100 fine, so I'll bring $100 of chocolate. They're probably not going to be okay with that. They're like very specific guidelines here. Right? You do what you're supposed to do, and that's it. Right? And the other ones we said, which ones are the ones that are wrapped up in their identity? They're not. Now, the identity isn't kapara. But they are wrapped up in their identity. So Pesach, because it's about Achila. And we already saw the Gemara very briefly, and Dav Dalet is the Omer. It's because it's defined as a Matir. Right? So there's an intuitive logic to the Mishnah, which is that the Karbanot that are most wrapped up in their identity, whatever that identity is, if they don't achieve that goal, right? They mean, I should say it differently. Their karbanot, whose identity is wrapped up in their ability to achieve a certain goal. If they don't, then they are nothing. Right? They are nothing. Right? And yeah, that's different than an Allah. An Allah is much more generic. It's a gift. Right? Gifts can be, can slide easily from one into the other. Right? They just can. That's their nature. So there is a logic. Whereas karbanot that are less wholly defined, not wholly H, but wholly as an entirely with a W, right? That are wholly, but karbanot that are not wholly defined by their goal, we can understand that they have a goal, but okay, right? You're planning on having a, we're continuing with this mashal here. You're planning on having an at home, someone else. I'll pick on someone else. Okay. Fine. Akiva is planning on having an at home date night with his wife. Okay. Good. So to that end, he goes out and you buy fancy ingredients, right? Do you cook? Akiva has learned to cook and he makes, a romantic dinner, and then, as often happens, right, you're about to sit down for dinner with your wife, and one of your kids, gets up and, go to the bathroom and slips and, falls on their face, and now you need to rush to get stitches or glue or whatever. Okay. Romantic date night is gone. Elamai, the food's already cooked, right? So now you're going to say, this was meant for romantic date night. Now I'm just going to throw it out. Or 11 o'clock at night, you get back from the hospital. You're still hungry. Okay, the romantic side is done, but I'm still going to eat it, right? Like, we understand, like, food, okay, maybe it was made to be for a date night, but, like, okay, date night is ruined. And you're going to, so that's kosher below Allah. Right? Now, if you want to have a date night, you're going to have to go back and get the food and cook it again. But in the meantime, you're going to eat it. I mean, what good food's going to go to waste? Okay, right? There's an idea of kosher below Allah. That's kosher below Allah, right? That's, right, the food, it's still food. I can still eat it, but it didn't accomplish what I wanted it to accomplish. Okay, this is correct. It can happen, right? It's not ideal, right? That's different than, you made a fancy dinner and, you were cleaning the table, right? So that the table would be nice. And, the cleaning liquid, which is toxic, pours, right? Falls over and pours all over it. Well, now it's garbage, right? Throw it out, right? Don't say, well, it doesn't taste as good, but I'll still eat it. No, right? You're very into making sure that everything is disinfected. So there's a little bit of bleach. Like, right? No. There are things that ruin it, right? There's kosher below law and there's puzzle. Oh, mazel tov. It doesn't, actually. Shocking there, yeah. How many years is this going to haunt us for? I just don't know. Like, how many years is COVID going to haunt us for? I know, that's what we're going to be doing. It's absurd. It's going to haunt us forever. So bad. God. Okay. We've gone through collective trauma. Yeah. Anyways, so the Mishnah says, yeah, right, there's kosher below Allah, right, and then there's pasul. And there is a certain intuitive logic to it, that the karbanot that are the most wrapped up in their identity, in their goal, or their identity is most wrapped up in the goal, those are the ones that are completely invalid. Chatot, Pesach, the Omer we already saw, and what's the one that's ambiguous? Asha. Right? Asha, it's somewhere in between. We got that. But we still need to define this thing called Lishma, very good. Now, before we can define it, we just need to to note very quickly, if you look at source 2 for a second, our Mishnah deals with Zvachim, but lest you think that this is only a halacha in Zvachim, meaning animal karbanot, you should know that the first Mishnah in Menachot is basically identical, that kol ha-menachot she-nikmitzu shelo lishman. So what is the parallel to Shechita in Menachot? Menachot being flower offerings. Kmitza, what's Kmitza? Someone do that more specifically. Nope. Okay, very good. Okay, that's more precise, right? That you get it. Wait, what you're doing is chafina. Do kmitza. Like that. Very good. Did someone do that? There you go. Kmitza, right? Kmitza is like this. Chafina is like that. Kmitza is like this, right? It's what you pick. That's what kmitza is. Kmitza is like this. Like this. Right? Kafa. Okay? How does that work? Why does anything go like this? What's the consistency of a mincha before you burn it? No, that's wrong. Yeah, so what's its consistency? No.
No, it's like raw, right?
No. So if you actually do the proportions, it is the flour with that much oil takes on the consistency of packing snow, of snowball snow. Okay? Yes. You can do it.
So it's like a little...
We can do it. I'm happy to do it. Right? What? I don't think we should be throwing oily bowls of dough. That seems to me like a bad idea. But that's the consistency, right? So you pick up that sort of packing snow thing like this. Right? That's kmitza. So, kol menachot shenikmetzu shelo lishman, ksheirot ela shel alu lebailim bishum chova, except for chutz mi, what's the parallel by menachot in karbanot? Mi minchat chote, the cases in which you bring a sin mincha, that makes sense. U minchat knaot, what's minchat knaot? Sota, very good. Sota, because why do you bring up the mincha of a sota? To go through the sota process. What are you going to say? Congratulations, Mrs. Sota, you brought a carbon. But we have to do this, like, you're bringing the mincha to go through the sota process, that's what it is. Minchat chote, u minchat knaot, shekim to shalosh one. And Natan Mikleiv, Allah Vehikta Shlolishman, Shlon Lolishman, Shlolishman, Lishman, Sulo. Right? And then, just like we have by Kachim, we have these categories of Lishman, Shlolishman, Shlolishman, Lishman, right? Where you start with Lishman, then you go to Lolishman, Lolishman, Lishman, etc. Okay. So back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, Yosi ben Choni Omer Hanyish Chatin L'Shem Pesach, U L'Shem Chatot, Sulo. What does that mean? Okay, good. So what? So explain that logic to me. What? Right. So what's the ambiguity already wrapped up right here? So there's two big questions here. What's his logic? And two, it creates certain problems. The problem here is, should it be obvious that if you bring something for Pesach and Chatat, it's possible? Maybe, because it's, if I bring a Chatat, if I bring a Asham, the Shem Pesach, what am I also doing? No, I'm bringing it, Shalom Lishma, right? Yeah. Right? But what does he say? That if I bring an Asham, let's say, the Shem Pesach, then is that the same as Lol Lishma? No. Because Lol Lishma would be Kasher V'Lawala. Yeah. This is Pasul, meaning I stop bringing it. It's totally invalid. Now, what is his logic, Bigadol? Right, broadly speaking, what's the logic? So. Yeah, but this isn't a Chatat. It's an Asham, and you're bringing it as a Pesach. Why is that? Right, if you bring, right, something else.
It becomes that? You're saying you do it for these, it sort of becomes them in a way?
And?
And if like, if you offer a Chatat when you don't,
very good, right? Meaning there are two, right? His logic is very simple. Is that if some, one second, right? Is that if some things, let's spell it out. If something's identity is wrapped up in its goal, so one expression of that is that if it can't achieve its goal, it is invalid. But what is his inverse implication of this? That because the identity of a chatat or a pesach are so strong, If I try to imbue that into another karban, it
works.
Right? At some level it works, but that's bad. Right? Because an ashram isn't the Pesach. Right? But what is that at? Now, what does that tell me about Lishma, though? But what does that tell me about Lishma? Right? What questions should be going off in your head about Lishma? Okay, one second. Your question first, go.
So, when it says, like, the ones that are sharing Kutzmina Chatab at Pesach, is that, like, I'm offering an Ola and I change it to Chatab? It's not kosher if I'm offering a Chatab and change it to an Ola.
No, an Ola for as a Chata.
So I brought...
You're talking about Yosef and Choni. Then it's puzzle. Completely puzzle.
But I brought a Chata and offered it to Ola, it's kosher.
Oh, no, it's also puzzle. That we already know. That was first case.
It's not clear that Yosef here is adding on to the Tanna Kamma. You could quite reasonably interpret it as saying that he's contradicting the Tanna Kamma.
That he is definitely not agreeing. It's not clear that he agrees.
It's not clear
that he agrees. No, that's true. But what does this tell you about Lishma or Lo Lishma?
It's not clear that this is an additional...
What does this tell you about Lishma?
The specific purpose?
Meaning that what is regular Lishma, right? If what does he say here? Here he introduces a Lishma... which actively transforms it and invalidates it, right? But normally you don't need that, right? A karban brought lo lishma is still kasher. But what does that mean? We need to figure out what does it mean to bring something lo lishma, because as we said, bringing something lo lishma, is that a neutral, meaning it lacks lishmanis, or it now has lo lishmanis? So what is Yossi ben Choni introducing? A case which is clearly... proactively bad, because it's positively something else. But therefore, what do we have to ask about the case of Lolishma? Is it that Lolishma is also a proactive negative, but it's not negative enough? Or is it the reason that Lolishma doesn't invalidate a karban is because it's not a proactive negative, it's a lack of a positive. And what Yossi Ben Choni is coming to introduce to us is that a proactive negative or alternative identity is enough to invalidate, but maybe a lack of a positive, right? So what we need to figure out is, this is clearly a proactive redefinition of the karban, and that, according to Yossi Ben Choni, destroys your karban. But what we don't know is whether the lo lishma case, which is kasher lo Allah, is because it is not a proactive identity, it's just a lack of an identity, or... it is a proactive identity, lo lishma. It's not lishma, it's lo lishma, but it's not as strong of a negative identity. We don't know yet. Yeah, we just don't know, right? And then this gets more complicated in the next line. Shimon achi Azaria omer, Shimon the brother of Azaria says, shachtan l'shem gavoa mehen ksherin, l'shem namuch mehen psulin. If I shecht a karban for a karban whose sanctity is greater than the karban that I brought, it remains valid, right? So,
these are kachem kachem, holy of holies, and this is kachem kalim. They're light holiness.
Okay? We're going to get there. But... it has to do with how much is eaten, basically. But there are different halachos. Is it brought bitzafon or not? Does that have to be brought in the north or not?
Is tamid kalim or kachem?
What?
Is tamid kalim?
Tamid kalim.
So it's kachem.
Oh, okay. Right? But let's say you bring a shlamin as a chatat.
It's okay.
It's good. If you bring, let's say, an ashamet, an ola as a shlamin, not good. Chatat we already said, so.
Perhaps it's not completely
now good. What's... right, so what's the problem now with Shimon Achai Azariah?
Is it completely kosher? Is it kosher like we
look at? So one of it, what does kosher mean? But kosher seems to mean...
you can do the whole...
right, valid, but not necessarily ole.
But
right?
It could be that it's completely kosher.
Right? Not probably, because the word kosher here doesn't seem to mean that.
But
right, in the Mishnah...
I'm in the Beira, I want to do this thing. I can still have this other purpose fulfilled. Like,
okay, good. But now there's something else that's important with Shimon Achai Azariah, which is, it makes it very clear that according to him, If he says you only mess up a carbon by bringing something that's of lower kedusha, right? That you intended for lower kedusha, what does that show him? Show you?
It doesn't actually transform it.
Right, and remember we said, is lo lishma a lack of lishma or a proactive? It has to be proactive, because clearly here you lack lishma. You brought the ola as a shlamim. You brought the shlamim as an ola. The fact that he's talking about that case means he's not talking about lack of lishma, because there clearly is lack of lishma. In both cases, equally. I told you, I'm bringing the carbon for the wrong carbon. They are both equally lacking lishma. And nevertheless, he says one of them invalidates and one of them doesn't invalidate, which means that how is he thinking of lo lishma? As the lack of lishma? Or as proactive lo lishma? No.
Proactive.
If it was lack of lishma, then there should be no difference whether you bring an ola as a shlamim or a shlamim as an ola. Because in both cases, you're clearly not doing it for the right reason. And yet, one of those he says is kasher, and one of those he says is not kasher. So he can't just be saying you're lacking lishma, because an ola is lacking. If I bring an ola as a shlamim, or I bring a shlamim as an ola, I'm equally lacking the intent to bring the proper karpon. Right? And nevertheless, he says, then one direction it's valid and one direction it's invalid. What does that show? That for him, is lo lishma simply the lack of lishma? No, it can't be, because they're both equally lacking proper intent. But what are they not similar in? Right? Apparently, one of them has a more invalidating intent, right, than the other. Right? So Shimon HaChayazariah is very important, because it now shows you that there is an idea of lo lishma, which is not merely the lack of lishma. It is proactive. We don't know the definitions yet, but just in this mission, we have got no definitions yet. Neither of lishma or lo lishma. All we see is that structurally, right?
Is it possible that the different opinions
of
the mission?
Yes, Evan is 100% right. Now, it could be that that's part of the machloket between Shimon HaChazariah and the Tanakhama. That's for sure. Right? That's for sure. This may be a machloket, but if you identified his position, for his position, it's clear that whatever is going on is not just passive. It's not just a lack. And then he just gives you his example. Kate said, Kachim, Kachim, Shachim, Lashem, Kachim, Kalim, Sulin, Kach, Kalim, Shachim, Lashem, Kachim, Kachim, Kshirin, Abachor, Vamasa, Shachim, Lashem, Shlomim, Kshirin, Shlom, Shachim, Lashem, Bechor, Lashem, Miser, Sulin. Okay, right? Then he gives you this example. Okay, so now that we have begin the discussion of lishma, you realize just by reading the Mishnah how many questions we need to answer. We need to figure out what is lishma, what is lo lishma, is lo lishma not lishma or anti lishma, right? Is there different types of lishmas, different types of lo lishmas, right? Why do you need lishma? What does it mean for something to be kasher lo ola? Right? What exactly does that look like? Why does that work? Right? We all these questions we have to figure out, but in order to do that, we need to figure out, well, what is this thing we call lishma? What is lo lishma? What is the kavana that is being discussed here? And that is what we will continue with tomorrow. Okay? Let's go.